click record.
Okay. Because when you said, like, the way you just, like, blended into it, like, I'm super, super interested in hearing what's stuck in your craw, man. I thought, oh, he just hit record. Wow, what a pro. And that's not what you did. Oh. So, Rob.
Yeah, Jersey.
Yeah, I'm mad about something, but I want to make sure that before we go into it, that I'm not going to step on anything that you had saved up. Are you mad about anything this week?
Huh. I'm not mad about anything at all, really. I'm incredibly mellow because if I had any anger, I was able to work it out of my system.
That's right. Yeah, you were at a concert where you damaged your body.
I did damage my body and my voice. I let it all out. Yep. And the band, I just want to say, is Battlecross. And I will link to Battlecross because they're from your area, right?
Oh, are they?
From Detroit. Well, not near your area, right?
Well, that's stone's throw from where I live.
Yeah.
That's funny. I'd not heard of these guys, or if I had, I forgot.
Yeah, they're wonderful. It's sort of the phrase, melodic death metal.
Huh.
But I would say they have some of the folks I work with, we exchange music and whatnot from throughout the day. It's like we'll sync up our iPod to like a jam box, and then people will just stream some music to it once in a while. Huh. And in tiny, tiny doses, I will once in a while share something like Battlecross. And someone who got extra curious about it offered the reflection that, you know, I've heard some other bands like this, but with these guys, it sounds like they just have a premise or a thesis that life is a battle, and it's pretty straightforward. So
you went with a coworker to this thing?
No, I didn't. I went with an old friend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you, like, this is a story where you turned somebody around at work and like,
no,
like,
yeah, that almost happened, but that would have been fairly fish out of water.
So okay,
I didn't want to force on him. So yeah, set that aside.
Want to set that aside. I want to dig at that just a little bit more by building another premise on top of this.
Okay.
When they're listening, and this isn't about like analyzing the specific culture where you work, but I'm just in your daily experience, when you're playing something like Battlecross, you say, oh, I sneak in every once in a while a little thing of Battlecross, and you tell somebody about it, and I know the way you talk about things that you like, you can be guarded about it sometimes, or maybe I should say cautious about it.
Sure.
Are people's reactions to that often, oh, that's interesting, tell me more? Or is it like the whole Battlecross, yeah, that sounds really cool, and then like it takes a couple more swings before they go, oh, I'm interested now, I'll listen?
Well, it's not something I normally share that much. I just feel pretty comfortable with some of the people I'm currently working with. And it seemed... all right. So basically, I was not playing much music, right? And you know, everyone else was. So that becomes obvious after a while. And yes, I am guarded about that kind of thing, because in a way, I don't really care if anyone else likes it or not. And I understand that it's like, I'm a person who really doesn't like blue cheese, right? And it's like a metaphor I use for a lot of things that are like way beyond my taste. And it's just not part of my palate that I enjoy. Actually, technically, there's been a couple of instances where I've had blue cheese that I thought was good. It's crazy rare. So even then, when I have a reaction, I'm like, ah, okay, I'll try. So I want to challenge it. I don't want to be defined by these, you know,
sure,
you know, whatever grumpy reactions to things. So, but I'm aware that this is like a blue cheese kind of situation where I'm a fan of it, and I know it's an acquired taste. And by and large, it's pretty obvious and easy to notice that there's not a lot of others who are into that, especially at my age.
Okay, but let's play act a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm hanging out with you. You know that I've got a thing for rich cheeses. Like, I'm going on about, like, recently you heard me talk about goat cheese. Like, oh man, goat cheese on a salad is the best. Feta on a salad is the best.
Yeah. Feta is the gateway cheese.
And then... So you hear that and you think, maybe he'd like blue cheese. Have you ever tried blue cheese jersey? Right? You might bring it up then,
what's
right?
So funny. Yeah, pretty much. So someone played a little of Master of Puppets. It's an old Metallica album. And I went, yep. Huh, that's the goat cheese, right? I mean, I was huh, okay. You guys like the feta? Well, maybe. And then I did share some of that.
And what was their reaction?
It was humorous.
Yeah.
Because it is pure bottled intensity in audio form. And they were it was like the punchline of a joke. I mean, it was delight. It was like, oh my God, what's happening? And, you know, that was the reaction. And
but not dear God, I better sneer at this first before I commit to deciding how I feel about it.
Yeah. Well, in other words, it was part of what you're exploring is, was it, you know, sometimes is it, can you get a feel for when others are open to exploration?
Yes. That's exactly where I'm going. Because I have noticed, I don't want to make a blanket statement about everybody, obviously, but a lot of people that I meet, their initial reaction to everything is this very, oh, that sounds really great, before they hear anything else. Because just in case they're kidding or it's dumb, I don't want to get caught flat-footed by being gullible or guileless and say, tell me more, when I'm supposed to say, that's something to be sneered at. It's that thing you do in junior high. Right? We all did it in junior high, but you're supposed to outgrow it. But I noticed, like, lots of adults I know. So, okay, here's my case in point. So I'm talking with some people that I know, and I know that one of the people that I'm talking with is into NASA and space exploration, space travel, right? And so am I. And I've been watching this show on Crunchyroll called Space Brothers, which is, as I described it, as Saint Elsewhere, but with NASA. And so knowing that this person is into NASA and knowing this person was watching some movies that featured NASA stuff in it recently, and because I got a bug on my shoulder about how any film, it seems, with a realistic depiction of space travel, realistic meaning something that we could conceivably do in the next 20 years,
yeah,
always features a monster, it seems like. It's like, oh, they go to the moon, but what's on the moon? You know, it's never just a story about some other drama which happens to have space travel. It's always about space travel is really cool, exciting, and dangerous because there's a monster. You know, the only time you see that not happen is when it's like super sci-fi. And so that's something that, as a fan of NASA, it bothers me when I see that a lot. And so here's the show where it's about NASA and it's just about human drama in relationships, and NASA's the backdrop. So I thought I'd tell this friend of mine. And some of the other people who were in the room with me, their reaction was, Saint Elsewhere meets NASA. That sounds like an unlikely combination. And I was like, well, first of all, wait a second. Because this is me talking, and I don't think I ever say things sarcastically. Secondly, you know, and I brought up, I said, can you name a movie that features realistic space travel where there's not a monster? And then they were like, no. I'm like, bingo, that's why I'm excited. And I shouldn't have to explain that. I shouldn't have to justify or make excuses or apologize for being genuinely excited about something. When you are listening to me and I seem genuinely excited about something, I'm not trying to pull something over on you. And it's an insult to you and it's an insult to me when you react to things like an eighth grader, you know? And this isn't even what I was mad about today. But you just reminded me of this when you brought up Battlecross.
I don't know when I've run into that last. I mean, I know I've run into it before, and I've perpetuated it. I mean, I would say, I don't know. I don't think I outgrew that for, you know, till like maybe last year.
Oh, give me a break.
I'm joking. I wanted to get you to laugh. But I would say my mid-20s.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of that can be verbal ribbing. You know, can be an okay way to relate, to be like, hey, I'm not comfortable being, you know, my entire range of emotions, but, you know, I can.
I just think that's a shame, though. I think that's a shame that is a commerce between adults. Yeah. And maybe this is me being too blue sky. Like, I've been accused of being flippantly optimistic at times, which I'm going to own that. Yeah, maybe I am a little flippantly optimistic. Maybe I am a little bit glib about the world because of my optimism. But I think it's a shame when we have to protect ourselves from that all the time. I mean, I want to live in a world where I don't have to go, are they making fun of me when they approach me about this thing? And if they are, then I'll go, oh, you're making fun of me. Okay. And move on with my life rather than have to feel like I have to protect myself from that all the time. Right?
I mean, it's hard. I mean, there's a lot of, you're right. I mean, it feels good to be in environments where you don't have to protect yourself all the time.
Yeah. That's the worst, man. I feel bad for everybody in their early 20s because that is what you go through in that time. You go through all this stuff where you're trying to define yourself and figure out who the heck you are and protect yourself from your friends who are going to make fun of you because they haven't figured it out either, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the worst. Anyway, but I'm glad that you are working in a culture where you get to say, hey, I like a thing, and people say, oh, well, what's so great about it? Cool, tell me.
Yeah, and not everyone likes the thing and all that.
They don't have to.
Like, exactly. But, and it's just like, that's not my deal. Exactly. But
I love listening to Ryan Estrada talk about weird Korean movies where things don't end well for people. I am not going to watch those movies. And Ryan Estrada has instructed me not to watch those movies, that they are not Jersey movies. But listening to him talk about them and listening to how excited he was about them is very interesting to me. That's the difference, right? You know, it's like you've been talking a lot lately about that Daniel H. Pink, To Sell Is Human.
Yeah.
We're always salesmen, but it's not necessarily the product that we're selling. Sometimes we're just selling point of view, enthusiasm, and approach.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I'm talking about, let's just segue this into my rant because I'm mad about something.
Sweet. Enough of the tease. What's the rant?
This actually relates to the rant. So I recently went to see a public speaker in the area where I live. I'm not going to name the public speaker, and I'm not going to name the area for the reasons that I don't want to attack anybody personally, and that's really not what I'm trying to do here. And the person in question, I'm sure they were doing their level best. But one of the things that comes out of doing as much teaching and audio stuff, public speaking, is that it's kind of like when you make music or you make art of any kind, when you see it, the stuff that you spend a lot of time thinking about done, you can't help but have that analytical eye on, right? So I'm both watching the talk and I'm also looking at the technique. And it's totally out of selfishness. What are they doing? What can I learn from this? What technique? Oh, that was a good technique. I'm going to steal that for my next thing, right? It's not to go cross my arms and like, oh, well, I'm here. Impress me.
Sure. I'm at level 100. Right. They're clearly below 100. And right. I'm now, going to, justify my position by picking them apart.
BS. I have no position. I'm just there to learn, right? Awesome. There's always an opportunity to learn and to gather materials, right? So that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing when I watch a movie. Even if I don't enjoy the movie, I'm watching it to pick apart what worked, what didn't work, what can I learn from this thing? Anyway, so I'm watching this guy. And this guy walks, like, I've been going to a lot of, like, talks lately and, like, there's a difference between the public speaker who stays at the podium and the public speaker who walks out to the edge of the stage. And when I see him walk out to the edge of the stage, that gives me a good feeling. Like, this person's going to be good because they have the comfort to come to the audience, right? Yeah. Rather than stand behind the podium and I'm nervous. And even when they're nervous, as long as they're doing their best, I'm not going to judge. But I'm watching this guy talk. And the big takeaway I got... I wish I could remember the log. I can't. As Ann and I were leaving, I came up with a log line for the talk, and it was like, "Self-satisfied white guy buries the lead and obscures his points in lengthy anecdotes where he comes out on top, and other people in his story are humiliated and destroyed."
That's fun. Isn't that just a Mary Jane story, right?
It kind of was. And like the talk was meant to be, okay, so when you're doing a talk, what are you trying to do, right? What is the point? What is the purpose of doing a talk? What story are you trying to tell? And it's my opinion that generally speaking, you are there to advocate for the audience. I'm here to help you with something. I'm here to help you think about something. I'm here to give you my point of view, my perspective, and my sense of passion and earnestness to attack a problem in a way that you may find interesting, useful, or at least a pleasant diversion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that broad enough, I think? I don't think that's too prescriptive. of a recipe for what you're trying to do when you do a talk. But this guy, he had some points, and they were decent points. And he was talking about design principles and how, this is the irony of it. He was talking about design principles and how a designer has to think about the need of the client. You are serving the need of the client. The client has a need. Your job is to identify that need, figure out the why, and then come up with the how to address the need of the client. And to make his points, he just told all these anecdotes about how he met this famous person, and everybody was too scared to talk to the famous person. He looked that famous person right in the eye, and he said something that was so smart that famous person came and had lunch with him the next day, and the person he was having lunch with sitting next to him was too scared to even look at the famous guy, so he got up and left the table, but he stayed at that table. And I think he was trying to talk about courage, but you're misdirecting us with your whole talking about how great you were in that situation. And I'm sure he didn't want to do that. I'm sure he was just trying to explain how courage can benefit your career, but he didn't connect to us in any kind of human way. He didn't get us to empathize with him by talking about how scared he was, how difficult that was. It was always, every story ended with him very calmly and triumphantly solving the problem and not talking about the struggles that went into that solution, right? And he made everything all about him instead of attacking the bigger topic on our behalf, right? And I think the thing I was saying to Anne afterwards was he was putting himself in front of his passions. He's positioning himself in front of his passions rather than using his passions to advocate for the audience. And what he highlighted for me was the learning experience was, if you're not advocating for the audience, if you're not making your talk about the audience, then you run an enormous risk of coming off as a self-satisfied creep. You know, and again, I don't want to pigeonhole this guy and say he's a self-satisfied creep. I'm just saying because his style of talk came off that way. He was an excellent speaker. He was so comfortable behind the mic, and he moved around a lot. He was great, but the structure and the anecdotes he chose were all so inwardly pointed. And I could go into more detail, but I'm afraid to. But anyway, because he made all, it highlighted for me something that I think applies to a lot of different design and art principles is, and also about promoting yourself, you have to make it about the people that you're trying to serve, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it turns into the meat show.
Sure. Let's see. I'm trying to think if I do think what you're describing, not to get, find some extreme to
do your thing, Rob. Do your thing. This is what I was hoping you would do. So elevate the conversation.
So it's funny that you mentioned the Daniel H. Pink book, To Sell as Human, because this is something I puzzle with, and I do struggle with as far as how do I become recognized for helping for a given thing and to be a helpful resource, right? So when you want to get hired by a certain client, or you want to work at a certain place, or in a certain industry, how do you? You need to somehow convey that it's not just coincidence that this work that's associated with you is by you. It's that you had this part that brought it up. You took part in it, and you had these things that you applied, and knowledge and skills and experience and questions that you explored, and the ways in which you explored them and all that stuff. There is a you in that.
Absolutely.
And then, so that's the danger is I think if we go to the extreme whatever, we can always, it's not always useful to paint the extreme picture. So I'm trying to make it a practical extreme of I think a lot of us, when we create, we're so satisfied with creating that this is why I get all stoked and excited over books like Daniel H. Pink's To Sell as Human. Is that it's trying to and it's a topic we've visited thematically a lot over our couple of years of doing this together in podcasting Jersey. Somehow there's more to it, the act of creating and applying your discipline and whatnot. There is the sharing it and being recognized for sharing it, so you can engage in whatever trade you're trying to engage in. And let's see, when you're doing that, I think now connecting with what you were describing, it's possible to provide service or expertise or a product that doesn't represent your client's needs as much as it represents how something you want to impose upon them.
Yeah,
that's that was probably actually less sustainable.
And that was actually one of the points he made in his talks. He said there are situations where you have to believe in the thing so much that if the client doesn't believe in it, you have to get the clients to believe in it the way you believe in it. And that's where some of that courage comes in. That's fine. Like I said, a lot of his points were actually really solid. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a little broadish, but I think he was speaking to a broad audience. But what bothered me was there's different ways to tell a story. Let's take Spider-Man. Here's one version of the story. This kid gets bitten by this radioactive spider, and suddenly he can leap all over everything, and he beats the living heck out of a bad guy, and then he goes home, and he has pie. Here's another version of the story. There's this scrawny, nerdy kid who gets punched around and pushed around at school. Everybody makes fun of him. The pretty girl won't look at him. He's really, really into science, but the only person who seems to think that's cool is his rickety old Aunt May. Mm-hmm. And he goes to the science thing that he's really excited about. Nobody else is. All the other kids are really bored and uncomfortable and unhappy. And he gets bit by this radioactive spider. He gets really crazy powers. And wow, all of his problems are going to be solved now. He doesn't have to take any guff from the bullies anymore. He can impress all the girls. But no, because he flaunts his power, his uncle gets killed. And he realizes that to use that power irresponsibly is a bad idea. And he's got to use his powers to help people. And he can't let any of those mean kids know that he is this really awesome guy. He can only do it behind a mask. Which version of the story connects with you? Which version of the story makes you feel that you have some skin in this game, you have some investment in this, you are involved in this, right? Granted, one had more detail. But what I'm describing here is there's a difference between telling a story to an audience and revealing the human complexity and the vulnerabilities and the struggles that went into it. And saying, so there I was, sitting around a table with 12 famous people. None of them could talk, but I could.
Well, it sounds very, it reminds me, it's been years and years since I've read any of his stuff, but like, it reminds me, it's like, sounds very Anthony Robbins, like.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, I mean, there's awkward times where he shows up in kind of like a Speedo man outfit with, you know, bikini ladies on his arms, and he's like, I used to be a janitor, and now look at me, you know?
I did it, so you can too.
And yeah, and it's like, okay, so what, let's see, if I was better knowing the techniques of rhetoric, I would say that one approach is looking to find a way to create identity with a shared perspective, and then the trend and the change in perspective and yep. feeling an emotional reaction because you went through that change yep. with that character to have yep. one assumption and then realize something shocking and now grow into a new outlook versus another one, which is a little more of a quick hit of like, I want to be like that. I want to have that power and gimme, gimme. Right. I mean, they're just different approaches. So, in your audience, were there others feeding off of that, saying maybe like, hey, I could be like that guy.
There were people laughing at the jokes, and I was not laughing at the jokes.
I see. That is an alpha male. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So are you highlighting my bias here, Rob? I think you are.
I might be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I mean, just speaking for myself personally, I did not have any empathy for this guy at all. And as a result of that, I was a lot less interested in the points that he was making because I felt completely disconnected from what his broader points were. And he was making me work for some of those points by burying them in these anecdotes. I don't want anybody to misunderstand me. I don't want anybody to misunderstand and think that, well, Jersey, you use yourself as an example all the time. You bet I do, because I can only relate my personal experience to my own, you know, telling how I overcame these things or how I struggle with these things is my way of communicating the broader idea. Mm-hmm. But what I hope I do is that I'm just as eager to share the failures and the frustrations as I am with the victories. As a matter of fact, probably to a point of a fault, I share the failures and the frustrations more than the victories.
I don't know, but maybe a younger Jersey did, but I think you share your process a lot. You share your process, and that may convey some of the struggles and whatnot. But no, I think that here's what was interesting. I thought you were going to set up maybe three different Spider-Man takes. And like the one Spider-Man take that I thought you might have been setting up was someone that did focus way too much on the negative of like, and I got to where I am because I have not just one scar, not just 20 scars, but I have 2 billion scars and I am made of scars. And
I'm made of scars.
That's actually a Slipknot song.
No, but, you know, it's like it's one of the recurring themes of the thing that we've been doing together is this idea of being human, right? Mm-hmm. And not propping ourselves up behind a brand. And it should have been a tell to me that in this talk I'm referring to a lot, the word brand was dropped a lot. But, you know, design, brand, yeah, sure. But one of the things we've been beaten at is this idea of, like, if I'm going to engage in interaction with people, I'm going to do it as a human being. And and all of that implies that that means that I'm going to allow myself to become vulnerable once in a while. And I'm not going to walk away from that. And I'm going to treat failures as learning opportunities rather than, oh, I guess I'm one rung lower on the ladder of life and all that nonsense. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I guess I'm revealing my bias that what I think is more relatable and approachable when telling a story, and when I say that, I'm trying to speak broadly, whether you're doing a public, doing a talk, whether you're teaching, whether you're telling a story in a story, or whether you're just talking online, the alpha male thing, boy, that's a turnoff for me. Because, yeah, it is less human. And I think the truth is someplace in the middle. I don't think that you necessarily got to be completely vulnerable all the time. Obviously, there's times when you want to go, hooray, hooray for me. I did a thing. It'd be idiotic not to. Because like you said, like the third option would be Spider-Man going like, oh, I can't pay the rent. And, you know, the girl won't talk to me. And I got all these powers, but it still means I'm miserable.
Or, you know, I got all these powers because I went through this hard thing, man.
Yeah.
My, you know, it is sad. It is a hard thing. His Uncle
Ben.
Ben.
Uncle Owen.
Dang it. Yeah, he could overly focus on that as opposed to, just exploring like what he could do now with this new perspective, and instead of just like attributing so much to the negative things that brought him to that new perspective.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, the whole alpha male thing, that's very interesting. I think I don't know. I think we deal with that a lot. And one area I try to think about that is in like the most like in raw, not humanly informed capitalism, right? Mm. And
we're getting political.
Is it political? Whatever. There's money. Hey, everybody, money exists. And different people have different approaches to that, right? So sorry if this is hitting buttons.
But, I was just being, I was kidding around.
Okay.
I do love it when you get aggressive like that.
So anyway, there's different approaches to it where saying like how I trade in that doesn't have to be informed with the rest of my approach to the world or things I want to see in the world. It's just, am I able to make the deal? Then that the always the truth is in the deal. Screw everything else. And I think power at any cost is, I think, kind of what we're getting at, right? Is that form of alpha male. Because I would say there's other alpha males. There's alpha humans.
Alpha humans. I've known a few alpha humans, and they are awesome.
Yeah, they exemplify just a broader informed perspective that I'm trying to dig for an example. But
perhaps part of my bias is colored by the fact that if you're doing a talk, there is an implicit contract that you're there to share knowledge with people, right? But if you come from a 20th century perspective, I guess you might think of it as this is you getting your accolades. This is you getting to gloat a little bit. Maybe, you know, this is you justifying why everything you did turned out so well. You know, maybe, I guess. Like I said, I wanted to attack the behavior, not the person in question.
Yeah, they're different motivations. Like, I didn't mean to try to put any kind of attack flavor on it either.
No, neither.
Toward you nor toward that speaker.
No, you want to know why I bring this up?
Yeah.
This is exactly why I bring this up, Rob. Because, like, when I left the talk, I remember feeling really satisfied with myself that I figured out what bothered me about it. I was like, I know why that bothered me. This, and this. Dust my hands. I beat that one. I intellectually conquered that one. And then the moment I felt that way, I was like, stop. That's exactly why you were mad at that guy in the first place. Time to take this to Rob. Let Rob elevate the conversation a little bit. Point out that it's complicated. Say something aggressive like, hey, people, money exists. I know. Shut up. And walk away feeling like, yeah, remember, you know what? It did bother you. And own that. And there's a lot going on there than just somebody feeling full of themselves, which I hope people understand that's not really what I was thinking.
No, you know what? Being proud about solving something, that's good too. I'm not trying to be like, oh, now I'm going to get all old. Come here, Sonny, and let me describe that, you know, good
right.
job for, I don't know, tying your shoes before you ran or whatever. I don't know. I'm not quite old enough to get that weird with advice, but I'm reaching.
I think you might be like 8 months older than me, so maybe.
Pretty sure more than that, but let's see, where was I going?
Sorry.
No worries. How do you? No, nope, totally cool. Train went off the tracks. It's always fun to be a listener when that happens too, huh?
When we're uncomfortable and human, after all. There we go. 30-odd minutes.